Hi, you're listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.
Thank you very much, Joe and Sarah. we're from Hope for the Future. Our charity specialises in lobbying people in how, training people in how to lobby their MP on climate change. And I'd just like to start by asking you, how many of you feel that you are listened to by your MP, or if you've never been to see your MP and were, that you would be listened to by your MP? How many people feel confident? This is good. Is there anyone in here that feels definitely not confident? So we're probably feeling more confident than not confident, and how many wouldn't know? Okay, great. We've spent the last 5 years traveling around accompanying people like yourself to lobby MPs and trialing different techniques, essentially. What works well, what doesn't work well. And we've got an 8-hour course, and we're going to try and condense that into 1 hour and share with you, I would say, yeah, some techniques that we've discovered that we found remarkably effective. So we have a 100% success rate in getting the MPs that we work with to go on and do at least one thing on climate change in Parliament following one lobbying meeting. And we want to share with you over the next hour what our secret to success is. But before we do that, why lobby your MP? I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but something that may help you in encouraging your friends and your family to do the same. I want to talk about education and courage. Most MPs know very, very little about climate change. Unfortunately, that's still the case. They are generalists, not necessarily specialists. So whilst a lot of MPs might look very good at appearing like they know what they're talking about, although that might be a matter of opinion, a lot of MPs will have constituents come to talk to them about potholes and then about maybe benefits, Brexit, probably Brexit again, about their immigration status, about a problem even that they have with their electricity bill, and then about climate change. And your MP never quite knows what's coming next, unless, of course, you're lobbying them specifically at a climate change lobby. And we'll get on and talk about that later. And so it can be quite daunting for MPs, especially when you come in with your piece of paper, and they may feel that you know more about the issue than they do. And that's when sometimes that glass wall that you hit where you feel like your MP isn't listening can become apparent. But actually, we have such an important role in educating our MPs about climate change. We have such an important role in getting documents onto their desks about what to do about climate change that other people who don't have that person as an MP will struggle to do. So education is one really important role, and we have all sorts of different ways of drip, 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 drip feeding the information to your MP, which we're going to share with you. The other is courage. There's a lot of research coming out, still coming out, saying that climate change, talking about climate change in Parliament is still seen by a lot of MPs as a career-limiting move to talk about climate change in Parliament. And that's because it involves talking courageously about the economy, about vested interests, long-term thinking beyond election cycles. It's a very difficult issue still for a lot of MPs to talk about. And Rebecca Willis has done a lot of research on that, and I'd recommend her to you. So it's really important to be able to say to our MPs, this has my vote and I'm behind you all the way. And that's how you hope to build more courageous leaders. And if you've got an MP who's good on climate change, write to them and say, thank you, I support you. If you've got an MP that's a bit lukewarm, it might be hard to imagine that it could be difficult for them to stand up and talk about something quite technical and sciencey in front of their peers, and they don't feel like they know much about it. So you can say to them again about the education thing, I'm here to teach you about this, I'm here to support you in what you want to do on this. And if you've got an MP who's absolutely useless and adamant that they don't want to work on climate change at all, then we're going to come on to what you can do with them. So education and courage, I think, are our two main roles. And the final thing I'd say, what difference can it make, is that when I go to the supermarket now and I've forgotten to bring my plastic bag with me, it feels embarrassing to ask for a plastic bag. It's just not what we do anymore. And that was because of a policy change that was brought in, and it's driven cultural change. And that's what policy can do. It can rapidly change culture. We saw the same thing with drink driving when that legislation was brought in. And now our generation wouldn't think, most of us, about getting in a car after having a drink. So policy can drive cultural change. And you, as one single constituent, can change the heart and mind of your MP. And we've seen this happen over and over again. And we're going to share some stories about that today. And we've actually got somebody who's on a journey with their MP, who's going to share their story of lobbying their MP as well. And then we're going to go into the techniques that we'd like to share with you. And there should be lots of time for question and answer, because we've only prepared half an hour of content. The first thing we want to start off with, though, is a role play to tell you a little bit more about what Hope for the Future does and why we are here. So Hope for the Future was born really out of a really bad experience I had lobbying an MP who will remain unnamed. And it went really badly, and I thought there must be a different way of doing this. And so we set about trialing this different technique. So we'd like to share with you a role play. I'm going to play a monster MP. Sarah's going to play myself when I first came new to lobbying for the first time ever. And what we've done is created a role play of everything that can ever go wrong when you lobby your MP. And really, it's to those of you who are feeling skeptical that you can't lobby your MP, we'd like to show you that we've seen the worst of it. Every single thing you'll hear, we've heard ourselves. So let's go ahead with that. Sarah, hello, come on in. Lovely to meet you. Hello.
Yes, thank you.
It's great to meet you. I don't believe we've met before.
No.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about myself. My role really here in this community is just to listen to the needs of the people and to do what I can to serve. And I can't promise to be able to solve every single problem that we have, but it's just my pleasure really to serve this community. So you know, you just fire away with whatever it is you have to bring.
Great.
To me today, and I'll listen and see what I can do.
Thank you. Yes. So
sorry, just before you do, you didn't come by car, did you? Because I mean, I'm actually a keen cyclist myself, but on the rare occasion that I come by car, I really struggle for parking. There's a whole lot of kind of issues.
I cycled.
Of course, you did, Sarah. Yeah. All right, sorry. Far away.
Yes. So anyway, so I came to see you because I was recently in Peru.
Oh, and Peru! What an amazing part of the world. How long were you there for?
Just 2 months.
And what was it you were doing?
Just some volunteer work.
Very admirable, Sarah. Always wanted to go, never found the time. So was it the capital that you were in, or were
in
you
Lima.
Around and about in Lima?
Lima, yes.
Oh, brilliant. And it was voluntary work you were doing, was
yes.
it? Yes. Brilliant.
And while I was out there...
Sorry, I'm interrupting. Fire away.
I did notice the devastating effects that climate change is having on the communities out there.
Well, of course, just to respond to your point there, Sarah, I think, you know, we're so lucky, aren't we, that we don't have to worry about that sort of thing here. But I'm sure over there... you know, it must be very worrying, and the issue does have my sympathy.
It is very worrying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, since I've got back to the UK, I've just noticed all the really damaging changes that the government has been making. And
well, just to respond to your point there, Sarah, you know, I think this government has an absolutely outstanding track record on climate change, you know, and I think everyone has their pet issue. Just to respond to your point here, I think everyone has their pet issue, don't they? The NHS, climate change, we've all got our little thing that we care about. We can't care about everything, can we? Just to respond to the point here. But I think, you know, what I'm saying here is, you know, we as a nation, we're part of, I believe it was every country in the world coming together
to, I believe it was in Paris,
to limit global warming to something around
two degrees.
Amazing. You know, every country in the world saying we're going to do something about that. And Britain was at the forefront of that. And I'm very proud of that
but
fact.
But even with the Paris Agreement, it's still not going to prevent the worst changes and effects of climate change. And, you know, we're not even on track to meet those targets. You're my MP. You're supposed to represent me in Parliament. What are you doing about it?
Yeah, well, you know, Sarah, you know, when I leave the room, I switch the light bulb off. That's something that I do. I've just changed my washing up liquid to eCouver. It's absolutely fantastic. I'd really, really recommend it to you. And, you know, I'm a keen cyclist. I've already mentioned that. What I'm really trying to say is people come in here, they say, why isn't the government doing this? Why isn't the government doing that? I'm doing my bit. I'm sure you're doing your bit. The government's doing its bit. So you just keep banging the drum.
But people are dying. Okay, so before we go on to talk about what on earth went wrong there and how we can avoid that kind of situation happening. In fact, first of all, has anyone had a conversation similar to that? We've got at least a couple of people. Yeah, a few people are putting their hands up. Well, as Joe says, we're going to go on to talk about ways that you can avoid, as the constituent, avoid conversations like that. And hopefully none of your MPs are actually quite as bad. Joe is playing an amalgamation of all the worst traits that we've come across in our years of MP meetings. But first of all, I'd like to invite another Joe up onto the stage. And we actually met Joe 2 years ago at Greenbelt. And we just got talking at our Greenbelt stand. But instead of me telling you what happened, I'll hand over to Joe and she can tell you about her story, her journey that she's on with her MP, Steve Baker.
Hello. Is that on? Yeah. So I'm Jo. I live in High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire and my MP is Steve Baker. Probably his politics are not quite the same as mine. He's on the libertarian side of the right side of the Conservative Party. He doesn't believe in human impact on climate change. And a lot of you will have perhaps come across him. He's vice chair, I think, of the ERG. So he's Mr. Brexit. So there's a lot of things that I feel I haven't particularly got in common with him. 2 years ago, came across the Hope for the Future store, went and had a little chat with them to find out what they were about. And Sarah said, well, you know, we can help you talk to your MP. And I said the sort of thing that I expect they hear a lot, which is, I don't know if there's a lot of point, really. I don't think he's going to listen. I don't think there's going to be, you know, much I can say that would convince him. But I left my details and they very kindly prepared for me a profile of my MP, which appeared in my email a few weeks later. And I had a look at it and I thought, well, this is interesting because it was about him and his beliefs and the sort of things that he did. But what they did was to highlight the things that were not to do with climate change, that were his particular interests. So he's interested in transport policy. He's interested in technology. And their recommendation was not particularly that I try and bend his arm to convert him to a climate cause, but that I home in on those particular issues and with some very specific asks about things that would benefit the climate that he might be sympathetic to. So I started off by writing a letter to him, a proper letter on paper, which I sent off and got quite a prompt response. And I made some specific asks about him contacting the Secretary of State for Transport, and he promised to do that and get back to me, which he didn't. But I was still in touch with Sarah, and she encouraged me to ask for a meeting, which I did. But I was quite nervous about doing that because I felt that what we've just seen would probably happen and that I might get cross or that I might get upset. But I had I Hope the Future based in Sheffield and I happened to be up there and I met with Sarah and she did a little bit of training with me and really helped me to gain confidence in the kind of language which would help me to overcome some barriers with him and how to avoid either being talked over or to get drawn into arguments which I was never going to win, but how to sort of pick one or two very specific asks and to be informed about them and to follow through with them. So I arranged a meeting. The other thing that Hope for the Future have is a brilliant website with lots and lots of researched information, lots of links to different issues. So before the meeting, I really did my homework and I felt that I could almost just go to that one website and follow the links and be really sort of confident that I was informed about the issues that I wanted to talk to him about. What slightly took me aback was when I wrote and asked for the meeting, one of his researchers contacted me, wanted to know in a lot of detail what I wanted to talk to him about. They wanted backed up references and things like that. So I initially panicked and I thought, no, I can do this because I've got all this information out there. So it took me a while, but I sent back a very detailed email with what I wanted to talk to him about and why, based around transport and electrification, because I knew that was what he was interested in. And it just immediately before my meeting, I read on the Hope for the Future website that there was an MP who had a private member's bill before Parliament, Bill Wiggin, about standardisation of electric charge points. So I thought, right, that's going to be my lead thing that I'm going to go with. And the meeting itself, I mean, it had aspects of what we've just seen, but I felt I was prepared not to be riled by him and prepared not to get sucked into some of the sort of, he was trying to push my buttons, shall we say. He was saying, we talked about transport, he was saying, well, you know, I'm a petrol head. I love my big cars. I believe that everyone should be able to drive whatever they like. But then we talked about, well, you know, electrification is happening. It's part of government policy now. And if it's happening, then surely it makes sense to standardise charging points. He was like, well, yes, that is a point. And then I told him about this bill that was coming forward. And he said, well, OK, I will. That sounds reasonable. I'll talk to Bill Wiggin about it. So we managed to find just a small area that we could agree on and that he agreed to take action on. The other thing that turned out to be really useful is that his researcher sat in the meeting with me, or with both of us, and she turned out to be much more interested in some ways than him. And she ended up backing me up on a number of points and sort of nodding agreement in a sort of, I kind of got the impression she might have been trying to have this conversation with him for a while. So that was really helpful and encouraging to me while I was there. A sort of follow-on from that was that in June I attended the Climate Lobby in Parliament, and I'd written to Steve Baker a couple of times before that, inviting him to come along, and he responded at the last minute to say that he wouldn't come, but I went along anyway, and there were a couple of other six or seven constituents there. They hadn't been in touch with him because, similar to me previously, I thought, well, you know, there's not a lot of point. But other people at the lobby were saying, well, if your MP won't come, you could get in touch with their office and see if they'll send someone from their office down. So I still had the phone number of the constituency office on my phone, so I rang, and it was the same researcher that I'd been in the meeting with, and she remembered me. So she said, oh, well, get on to the office in Westminster and see if they'll send someone down. Which they did, miraculously. But one thing that opened my eyes about that meeting was she said, I'm not going to come round to meet with you on the embankment, which was where the lobbying was taking place, because it's too far. And I thought, well, that's, you know, it's not that far. But I'll come and meet you outside the gates of the Palace of Westminster. So myself and the other constituents went round there. And she told us what she looked like, and she made a point of telling me how old she was, which was middle age. I thought, well, that's interesting. I didn't really need all that information, but okay. And she came down and I recognised her from her description. And she was really kind of a little bit nervous, but as constituents, we all got talking to her and came up with some things that we wanted to ask, and she wrote them all down, and the conversation sort of warmed up, and she became more and more comfortable and more interested and wrote lots of things down. And at the end of the conversation, she admitted that she hadn't wanted to come round to the embankment because she was afraid. She was really frightened of the lobby and that people would be aggressive towards her. She told me how old she was because she thought that if she let us know that she was an age that maybe we might think was a bit vulnerable, then we might be kind to her. She'd taken all her jewellery off before she came down to the gate because she was afraid of what might happen. And it really made me think, gosh, you know, there's such an antagonistic thing going on where they're seeing us as the enemy and there's a danger of us seeing them as the enemy that, you know, once we can actually look each other in the face and have a conversation. She was so positive at the end. So we're all really nice people. You're all really normal. Well, normal-ish. But, you know, it was encouraging. And actually, she went away and did a lot of the actions that we'd asked for her. And just last week, she emailed me, having got in touch with our local council, to ask them some questions, sending the response. And I was able to have another email conversation with her. So even if your MP isn't kind of super engaged and you're not going to win them over, their office maybe has a lot of influence with them, and I kind of think this is a journey of getting them on board as well. So,
thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Jo, for sharing your story. And I think it's just really exciting to hear that from Jo saying, no, I just don't feel confident. I wouldn't have anything in common with my MP, to going and, well, trying to meet with him at the Mass Lobby and getting some tangible actions out of him and his researcher as well. And thankfully, Jo has talked about a lot of the things that we do touch on in our training. And I would say the most important thing, the thing that our entire approach is based upon, is finding that common ground. And I'm sure we can all agree that that is something we are in serious need of in these political times. And as Jo says, we can prepare research briefings for you. These are based on your MP, so if you let us know your MP, we can do all the background research and suggest areas of common ground that you could find with them. So, for example, in Jo's case with Steve Baker, it was the issue of transport, but another MP might be interested in health, and you could go in and talk to them about how, you know, transport and reducing air pollution is going to benefit people's health, but also reduce emissions as well. Or, you know, we worked with a MP, Karen Lee, in Lincoln, and her office manager said to us, you won't get Karen Lee interested in climate change because her champion issue is poverty. And we said, well, climate change is going to affect people living in poverty the most out of anyone. So, you know, going into the meeting with her and talking in from that angle is a really good thing to do. So the first step that we would say in your MP engagement journey is actually researching your MP. And as I say, we can do that for you and send you a briefing. But if you can do it yourself, if you have the time to do it, that would be brilliant. And you can really get to understand your MP. Has anyone used the website theyworkforyou.com? Yes, some people have, some people haven't. It is a really brilliant website. You can search, if you don't know who your MP is, first of all, you can just type in your postcode and it will come up with your constituency and it'll say who your MP is and it will give you an entire profile of their parliamentary activities. So from what they have voted on, which way they voted, any times they've talked in Parliament or submitted written questions, any roles they have in Parliament, any committees that they're members of. So They Work For You is really good. Looking at their website, nearly every MP has a website. There's the odd one that doesn't. But you can find out what their current campaigns are in the constituency. You can find, they usually have a sort of bio section telling you about their previous work, their previous careers. And all of this information will help you to understand your MP a bit better. And I'm now going to point out, we have these campaigner work booklets. And if you're interested, we have these on our stand, which is just down this row of climate change stands, just at the end over there. We are asking for a donation for the booklets, but please do go and chat to the lovely people who are at the stand after this talk. But it takes you through everything you need to know about engaging your MP. And on this sixth page, you will find that we've got an opinion scale. And we would suggest that from your research, you can begin to think, okay, where might my MP sit on this opinion scale? If we've got a 1 to 5 scale, one being completely disinterested, opposed to any action on climate change, which Steve Baker probably was before Joe met with him, right up to 5, which would be, my MP is in total agreement that we need to be doing something about climate change. I'm just going to have a drink of water. So where does your MP sit on this opinion scale? And an important thing to note about this is that persuasion research has shown that in one engagement, you can only move someone along one place, one or two places in one engagement. So if your MP is down at a 1 and they're not interested in climate change, you have a meeting with them and you come out at the end and they're not a 5 saying, yes, climate change, we need to do everything we can. That's okay. You've probably still had a good conversation. It's not been a complete waste of time. You might have moved them up to a 2 or a 3. At the end of Joe's meeting with Steve, he definitely wasn't a 5, but you know, he could begin to see the co-benefits. He might have been a 2, you know, seeing that there are some reasons to be acting on climate change, but it's still not his 1 issue. You can also start to think about where to pitch your conversation. And Joe's going to go on and talk about asks and what you can ask your MP in a little bit. The other thing to think about is what actually motivates your MP. So we have come up with 4 categories of MPs, and obviously not every MP will fit into one category. Some might fit into more, and there might be others that we've not thought of. But generally, most MPs become an MP because they want to make a difference in the world, and they probably hopefully want to make a positive difference in the world. But we found that some MPs have different motivations within that. So some MPs are sort of local heroes. They were born and bred in the local constituency. They've become an MP to represent their constituents, and they just want to improve the local area, and that is their 1 goal. So if you were meeting an MP like that, you would really ground your conversation in the local. So rather than talking about Peru, as I did with Ms. Musker Sherwood, talk about, okay, well, how might climate change affect this local area? How might it affect the people here? Or how might action on climate change improve the lives of this MP's constituents? Another category, the career climbers. I'm sure many of us here would see that in some of their own MPs. So these MPs are probably, you know, trying to get up the ladder and maybe become a minister one day. And these MPs will be more likely to stick to the party line. They want to show that they are loyal to their party, but they may also be ambitious within that. So they may be more willing to push their own party and think, okay, this is an issue that is a vote winner. And so let's talk more about that within our party and improve our own policies on it. We've got the been there, done that MPs. So these are the ones who are maybe a bit older. They've been an MP for a really long time. And they're probably not looking for really long, lengthy ventures. They're probably looking for something really interesting that they can get their teeth into. Maybe even just a really interesting conversation that'll get their cogs whirring and they'll go on and do something about it afterwards. And then the final one we have is the alliance builders. So this might be someone like Caroline Lucas, as the only Green MP. She'll be looking to build alliances with other small parties like the SNP or Lib Dems. And with that, I think I will hand over to Jo to talk about asks. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. So we've talked about some of the things that didn't go very well in that conversation, which was around talking about Peru, which I had no interest in. There was no sort of attempt to try and tailor climate change to me, which is understandable, but from my perspective, I had no reason to listen to Sarah. And the other thing that wasn't quite going so well there is that it didn't appear like Sarah had an idea of exactly what she wanted me to do. So what can you ask your MP to do? And a lot of people actually don't know what they can ask their MP to do. So we wanted to share with you three ideas. There are actually loads of things MPs can do, but the top three, the first one is a really simple thing. You can ask your MP to submit parliamentary questions, which what are the impact of those? So first of all, written parliamentary questions are sort of tabled Monday morning. The MP will draft them up, or their office staff will, and send those in. And they have to be information gathering. So something like, what assessment has the government made on the impact of the recent changes to support for wind energy, for example? Or what plans does the government have to... Questions that start like that. The benefit of those questions is, first of all, you can generally tell the MP's opinion from those questions, and it puts their opinion on record. And as we talked about previously, climate change is seen as a career-limiting move to talk about in Parliament. There is so little talk about it in Parliament. And so just getting climate change mentioned is really important in itself. But the minister has to respond to those questions within a set period of time. And you know you've struck gold when your MP submits a question, and then the response that comes up is the minister is having to form a response because they haven't actually thought about it before. And the number of ministers have said to us that it's really helpful for them to have to think through different angles of policy that they perhaps not thought through before. So that's the advantage, some of the advantages of parliamentary questions. And it's helpful if you actually draft them on behalf of your MP. If they're really not particularly confident, if they're right at the beginning of their journey, you can say, look, I'm even happy to draft them for you. And then you can ask us to draft them for you, to draft them for your MP. So that's one thing you can do, parliamentary questions. The other thing you can do, the second thing you can do, is any MP, climate skeptic right through to somebody who went into politics for climate change, any MP can do this. Pass your letter onto a minister. If you write directly to a minister, a civil servant will read it. If your MP passes the letter to the minister themselves will read it, and they will themselves have to respond to the issue. And the best thing is to pass your own letter, but ask the minister to write a covering letter and to make sure they write something themselves. And then you can ask them to forward the letter back to you. So that's the second thing. And that can be about anything. And it can go to the Prime Minister, and then it can go to the relevant department. And if you want any help with that, again, that's something that we'd help you to do. We're going to come on to different policies that you can ask about in a minute. And the third thing you can ask your MP to do is to engage with you again. So, for example, you could ask your MP if they would come and attend a climate change event at your church, or perhaps a school workshop, or if they'd like to go and visit a community energy site. Anything that gets them out of their office, into the community, hearing from people about climate change, learning that this isn't a niche issue. And this is something we can help you with. So one of the things we do is school workshops, and they're brilliant because we write to MPs and we say, would you come and educate these students on climate change? They'd really love to hear from you. And the MP goes, yes, I'd love to do that. And then the students, who probably know far more than the MP does about climate change, present their climate change campaigns to the MP. And you see them there scribbling down notes, and they're learning tons. And it's a great way to actually feed your MP information without putting them on the defence. Another thing, say, if you did a panel discussion, the MP has to learn about the issues, hear from other panellists as part of the event as well. And it's a great way of just gently moving your MP along. And it's high investment, but it is highly, highly successful. We actually did this with Alex Chalk, who's the MP for Cheltenham, where Greenbelt used to be. And he was a new MP in 2015. And we lobbied him with a variety of others. Christian A was there, and a few others were there lobbying him. And he was pretty adamant that the government was doing all it could on climate change. But as a result of that meeting, he did ask a question on the change to solar energy feed-in tariffs in Parliament. And I'm aware there's some other groups who have been working with him, but we also followed up with a school workshop, and he learned loads from the students there, and there were one or two students that challenged him a lot. And as a result of that, he then began submitting several other parliamentary questions. We then held an event on renewable energy, and he spoke at that event and said, yeah, I really want to start taking this forward. And he was one of a couple of MPs who put forward the policy to make to basically redo the climate change policy that we have here in the UK and commit the UK to net zero emissions by 2050 as opposed to 80% reduction in emissions. And so he's been really instrumental in pushing that forward. And that was an MP who back in 2015 did not see climate change as a priority. So it was just those repeated engagements from a number of different people that really helped to move him along on that. So those are three things that you can ask your MP to do. Parliamentary questions, written letters, and to come along and engage with you again. Okay, what to ask your MP to do, and then we will open up to questions. So what kinds of policies? I'd like to direct you again to our stand. We've got a postcard, five ways the UK can reach net zero. There are five suggestions, and they're from an excellent report by Green Alliance, who are a green think tank that I would really recommend. You'll find the link to their report, which is online, on this postcard. And they've got five really simple policy suggestions that are quite difficult to argue with, that appeal across Conservative, Labour, Lib Dem, SNP, they've done a lot of research on showing opinion polls and things that these policy changes are popular. And so if you're new to climate policy, this is a great place to start. And it's a postcard. So you can actually write a personal letter to your MP. And that's really important. If you can, write your own message, because MPs really value that when they can see someone's taken the time to actually write something themselves. And you can post it in our little box and send it off to your MP. And that's one way of educating them. But it's also take one home if you'd like to learn a little bit more. I'd really recommend that report to you. But they're not the only policies. They're just a great starting place if you're new to policy. But again, if you're really interested and you want to know more, we do deliver policy training for the layperson, as it were, to prepare you for going in to meet with your MP. I think we've talked about everything we intended to cover, haven't we? We've talked about finding common ground, asks, relationship building, different types of MPs, opinion scale. Yeah, I think we'd like to open up for questions from you, maybe about your own MPs or any further questions that you've got for us that we might be able to help you with. The gentleman there. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, I was just going to take this. Yeah. Can you come and talk into the mic?
Would you say there's no point just signing general postcards and petitions for MPs and writing saying, well, this is what I think, the way I want you to vote?
Okay, so you're thinking about things like 38 degrees, those petitions, or what kinds of thing are you thinking?
All sorts, but yeah, those kinds, anything really, Brexit.
Okay. Don't stop signing those things. definitely sign those things, and there's definitely value in that, for sure. But I think the difficult thing with climate change is you feel like one person in several billion, and what difference can you make? And I think with this approach, what we're saying is that if you really want to make an impact, there are 650 MPs, you can actually transform one of those MPs at least in how they think about climate change. And this is, in our opinion, one of the most effective ways to do that, by really tailoring it making it as personal as possible. So by all means, sign those things, but actually taking the time to write personal letters, handwrite your letter. MPs love it when they get a handwritten letter. Send an electronic copy as well. Someone's nodding at the back. Yeah, it makes them feel really, really special. So anything you can do to show your MP that you've put the work in, we've just heard over and over again, literally never interviewed an MP, and we've interviewed a lot of them, saying, what do you like to hear from climate lobbying? They say, I want to see that people have put the work in themselves. And MPs have talked about, you know, they've had a lot of letters that have come through that say, dear, insert the name of your MP here. And it annoys them. So don't stop signing those things, but it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than that.
Yeah, I would say that the mass letters and e-petitions and those sorts of things, they have to be part of a wider campaign. Yeah. So they are good. And the thing that they're great for is showing numbers, showing how many people, their constituents across the UK, how many people care about it. But it has to be coupled with, okay, I've signed this petition. Now I'm going to write to my MP and say, oh, I've signed this petition. And, you know, if your petition reaches that threshold, I'm going to forget the numbers now, 10,000 to be... Sorry, 100,000 to be debated in Parliament and 10,000 to get a response. If it reaches 100,000 and it goes for debate, write to your MP and say, oh, there's a debate going on. Would you go along? I'd really like to see you there. And you can check out on Parliament TV whether they were there or not and if they said anything.
That's tough. Hello. So I'm lucky enough to have a wonderful MP. I know it's great. Stephen Timms is my MP, and he does all the stuff you guys are talking about. Responds to letters, tweets you back, attends events, is great. So my question is there a point of like almost MP fatigue in that they're engaging on lots of different things and they're being great? Should you switch to someone else's MP at some point, or how do you risk not wearing them out?
That's a great question. I think a really important thing, especially if you have a brilliant MP and even if you have a useless MP, is to keep contacting them, say thank you, make sure you're emailing them, writing to them, still meeting with them, and you can just be saying, oh, what have you been up to? Oh, I was so pleased that I saw you say this thing in that debate, or thank you for submitting that written question. Invite them to events. Yeah, MP fatigue. I think if they're getting those rewards, and that's something we talk about in our training, is rewards. And when you're asking an MP something, think about, well, what are those things that they're looking for when they agree to do something? That might be a constituency mandate. So, you know, the publicity of speaking at an event, or the case study, the really exciting story about the constituent that they helped. Or learning more about something, thinking about those rewards and making sure you're offering them. I feel like that will keep them going.
I was going to add, if you've got a really great MP, it's worth working with your local council as well. And we've got a new project working with local councillors, which you might want to look at. It's called Authority to Act, and it's all the different things that you can ask local councils to do, especially councils that have declared a climate emergency and then they're kind of wondering what on earth it means, that kind of thing.
And we've got our project worker Julia at the back if she
give
wants
us
to
wave.
Give a
wave. Yeah, sorry for embarrassing you. It's like mum and dad. So I think that's, and I don't think there is any such thing as MP fatigue. They work for you. They work for you. And it's, you know, it is about building the relationship, and you can always go deeper, and there's always more that you can do. And even those of us that, no, I'm not going to say those of us, those people that know loads about climate change, there's always more to learn. So yeah, great question, but like, keep going. Definitely. Yeah.
Other congratulations.
Questions? Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have a question, just come and form a queue and then we'll get them going through quicker.
My MP is in climate change denial and quite hostilely so.
Commiserations.
It's hard. Is there any point, because he posts really odious things on Twitter at 4 o'clock every afternoon, many of which are to do with climate change, is there any point me responding or engaging with him on Twitter, or is that a complete waste of my energy and... makes me very quite angry.
Do you want to name and shame?
Yes. He's David Davies, not David Davis, but he's Monmouthshire David Davies.
Well, you know him well,
Monmouth.
Don't you?
Yeah. So we have worked with David T.C. Davies, and apparently he loves hydrogen. So he wants to see hydrogen cars and trains. So maybe that's something that you could speak to him about, electric vehicles. You don't look that impressed. engaging on Twitter. That's a really good question, and I think very apt for these days. And I think the best way that you're going to build a relationship with an MP
earn their trust in what you're saying and what you're telling them and the views and values that you have, the best way to do that is by meeting with them and building that face-to-face relationship. I think electronic communication, particularly Twitter with the limit of character count, it's really difficult to do that, and you can end up just doing this sort of this is my opinion, well, this is my opinion, and it's really difficult to move someone along in that way. So yeah, I would say actually going and meeting with him, showing that, as Jo was saying with her group, you are a normal person, you have a concern about climate change, and climate change fits with his values as well, and you can show him that through your conversation with him.
Yeah, I'd just add, if anybody does want to go and see their MP, and you feel nervous about it, one of our team will come with you if you'd like, and we'd also find other people within your constituency to go with you. So social media, I think, is useful for two things, just to add to what Sarah said. The first is good publicity for your MP. So it's a kind of reward. So if you have seen your MP, it's great to go, great to meet with, even if it wasn't that great, about climate change. And great to see how passionate they are about climate change. Okay, so it sounds a little bit manipulative, but if you believe the best in people, then they start to step into that role, and that is absolutely true. But also they begin to think, okay, this is a constituent where they'll give something back to me, and publicity is the lifeblood for a lot of MPs. The second thing that social media is useful for is if you really cannot get through to your MP to organise a meeting, and we've done this before, where we've said, hey, at Ian Lavery, to name and shame, we've been trying to get through to you to arrange a meeting for the last, and it was for 6 weeks we've been trying, and within 12 hours they rang us up and said, yes, let's get that meeting sorted up. So social media is really good for good publicity for the MP and essentially giving them a reward, and for chasing them up if they're being really bad. I think you can challenge somebody on facts, but you can't challenge someone's worldview on Twitter or, to be honest, in one engagement. And so I would say trying to get involved in debate, it's going to take you in a route that isn't particularly constructive, and you haven't got the same room for manoeuvre as you have when you're face-to-face. So I would probably not engage with that. I wouldn't find that very constructive. That'd be my thoughts.
We've got about 10 minutes left. So
we have 10 minutes left, so that's it. No more people.
Hi, I used to be a lobbyist for the motorcycle industry, which involved a fair few meetings with the famous petrol head, Steve Baker. And in that role, I found it quite easy to change technical bits of legislation, little amendments, but found it very hard to change overarching policy. So do you have any tips in terms of, when it comes to climate change, which of those two is more important, and how you treat them differently?
Okay, great question. So I think one of the things that the climate movement isn't always very good at doing is linking up with each other and what each other is doing. But that's how you bring about the huge kind of policy overhaul. And we've just seen, I mentioned net zero, which is amazing. And that took the effort from all the different climate organizations coming together and pushing for net zero. We all had different ideas about when we thought it should be done, by 2025, right through to 2050. But that was a huge push from everyone. So I think the collaborative effort for the big policy change is really important. And that's about knowing, for example, say you've got a select committee, which, for those of you that don't know, a select committee is kind of a committee of MPs that are, their job is to look at particular issues. If you wanted to run a campaign on a particular issue relating to a select committee, you would target across the country the different MPs that are part of that select committee, and you would know that a particular review is coming up in 6 months' time, and that's something Hope for the Future can help you to work out. The other thing is all party parliamentary groups, which are basically APPGs, are interest groups for MPs, but they're not quite so important. But those sort of groups, I think, are really important for the big policy change. But that, you know, if you're just working one-to-one with your MP, then those little policy changes, as you said, are quite easy to bring about. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, and Joe mentioned earlier about how doing something on climate change can still be seen as a career-limiting move. But through our engagements with MPs and our whole relationship-building approach is all about changing hearts and minds of MPs. And if we begin to get that critical mass of MPs who do, they are doing things on climate change, even if they're small things, they're beginning to say the words climate change in Parliament, then we will get enough people, a sort of critical mass, that will change that culture and people will begin to see, okay, climate change, acting on climate change is a vote winner. We need to be showing that our party is trying to tackle climate change. So even if you feel like you're just one person working with one MP, well, we can tell you at Hope's Future, there are a lot of people doing it as well around the rest of the UK. And hopefully, even if it is these kind of small things, eventually it will turn into something bigger.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, next question.
In what way do you think young people's opinions and letters change MPs' views?
Thank you. MPs love to hear from young people. It's harder to be horrible to young people, I think. some can manage it. It's interesting. When young people decided to strike for climate change, when young people decided to strike for climate change, the Conservative Party came out and said, oh, this is truancy, you should go back to school. I don't know if you remember that. Did you hear about that at all?
Yeah.
And that was really embarrassing. It went down really, really badly. And as a result of that, the Conservative Party have now internally put a three-line whip. And what that means is basically for every person within the Conservative Party, every MP, they have to do this. They have to, the party leaders saying, you have to do this. They've got a three-line whip that any young person who writes to an MP or any school that writes to an MP about climate change and wants to engage a Conservative MP on climate change, they have to go. They have no choice over it. They've got a three-line whip on that. So that's an amazing impact that the youth climate strikes have had. And sometimes, often, the adults are wrong. The Conservative Party have acknowledged and made a mistake in the way that they responded to young people like yourself. So that's one way in which they're listening. And I think, you know, it's so important in that sense. So thanks for what you're doing. It's awesome.
Definitely. And even though you can't vote before you're 18, you can still engage with your MP. You can still write to them and meet them. So, yeah, it's the way to engage, definitely.
Well, that was good news. our constituency is about to experience, we hope it's about to experience a by-election. Do you have any advice for people in that situation with a new MP where you don't have much information?
Great.
Go on. Did you want to?
We're probably going to tell the same story. New MPs are great because a lot of the time when they are first elected, they're looking for the new their issue that they want to grasp. And Joe mentioned Alex Chalk earlier. We met with him when he was a really new MP and he was really unsure of himself. He came in, he was like, oh, where would you like me to sit? I don't know that much about climate change. But you could tell that he was engaging much more because he was looking for that issue that he wanted to champion. So I think if you have got a new MP, it's a really good opportunity to get in there quick, start building that relationship, show I'm a really good person to work with, or my group are a really good group to work with, will support you in these ways, and show them that your issue is one that they should take note of.
Yeah, it's a great campaigning opportunity because, say, you can hold hustings and climate change hustings and ask candidates to make their commitments there and then. And is it a marginal seat that you're in, or is it likely to go a certain way?
You'll know it. It's Hallam.
Hallam. Oh, my goodness. That's my MP as well. Yes. Okay, yeah. We can moan about that later.
I've managed to get some relatively personal responses from my MP, but when it comes to actual policy specifics, because they're quite a career-minded MP, they either don't respond at all to the thing that I've stated, that they send me a letter, but it doesn't actually respond to the question I've asked, or they skip over it as the policy of the party is. Is there any way in which I can kind of move that forward?
Okay, is this predominantly in your letters, or have you also met them face to face?
It's been letters and emails.
Okay. the first thing I'd say about letters and emails is that when you write to your MP, you will get a stock answer back. And chances are the MP themselves won't have read it, but it'll be their office staff who's responsible for processing that. They'll have a template and send it out. So it's the second letter that you send that goes, so on that specific point, and that's when the MP has to start to engage a bit more. But it sounds like you've done more than that, but just to mention that. I would definitely say go and meet with them. Who's your MP, if you don't mind me asking?
Sarah Newton.
Sarah Newton?
Yes. In Cornwall. No, yeah, Cornwall.
Yeah, so again, just about finding, so it's a local hero, would you say? Or, no, career-minded, career. You said career-minded. Career. So yeah, about finding kind of what kind of ministerial role she's looking at and what kinds of issues and tailoring it to that.
I've approached her on issues that she is minister for.
Yeah.
And not received responses.
Okay. What minister is she for? What?
Maybe we should speak to you after.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We could talk to you specifically about Sarah Newton.
One of her neighbouring MPs, as I was thinking about, Derek Thomas, would be really worth linking up with as well. So that would be, if you're struggling with one MP, you can use the leverage of another one. So we'll talk to you afterwards. Great. Thank you.
I live in West London and my constituency is Uxbridge and South Ruislip, and my MP is Boris Johnson. Any information, advice, do I send my grandchildren to see him?
Go back to bed. You can answer that one.
Okay, that is a tricky one. If you could get a meeting with him, that would be amazing. Obviously, for obvious reasons, that might be more difficult. Boris Johnson is a really interesting one. And I think one of his key things that we've learned about him is that he loves this idea of legacy. He seems to be really keen on that. So, you know, how he did the Boris Bikes, you know, naming it Boris Bikes, legacy, ego, I don't know. Anyway, if you are trying to write to him, if you do try to meet with him, tapping into that. And I was speaking to someone yesterday and they were saying that they read Boris Johnson's book on Churchill and they felt that Boris Johnson is, you know, he wants to be like Churchill. He wants to be the next Churchill, basically. And obviously his key issue, as we all know, is Brexit. But trying to frame climate change and be like, this is the big issue, alongside Brexit maybe, or we can use Brexit to address climate change. These are some of the things that you could do if you're engaging him. But in terms of actually getting through to him, it's obviously going to be difficult.
I was just going to say that there is a bit of hope there, I think, really, because all but one of the Conservative Party candidates for the leadership signed up to net zero. So this was before it was implemented, and that included Boris Johnson. And he's just given a ministerial role to Zach Goldsmith, who's another London MP for Richmond. And Zach Goldsmith, who's obviously quite famous and terrible London mayor campaign, but he's really, really good on climate change, really good on the environment. He used to be the editor. I think he might still have an editorial role on The Ecologist. He absolutely knows the environment inside and out, and he's worked really hard to support Boris in his leadership stuff. And as a as thanks, Boris has given Zach a ministerial role, which, considering Zach resigned from the Conservative Party a few years ago, is extraordinary. And that gives me quite a lot of hope, I think. So maybe that would be a good place to finish on.
One thing I've just thought of, and Jo mentioned in her story, is making friends with his office staff could be a really good way. You might not be able to meet Boris, but getting to know his staff, his researchers as well. We've had some brilliant relationships with staff, particularly researchers. Gutto Bebb in Aberconwy, his researcher got us access to the Parliamentary Library. So, you know, things like that could lead to fruitful things as well.
Great. Thank you so much. We've really enjoyed it. Come and see us at the stall. And if you'd like any support whatsoever with lobbying your MP, it's what we're here to do. So hope to see a lot of you then. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Great Thinking, Ideas and Conversations from Greenbelt. At Greenbelt, we make a space where artistry meets activism, where the political meets the practical, where the sacred meets the secular. We think we're somewhere to dream up a better world, to dance and debate, to pray and to party. Visit greenbelt.org.uk to browse and download other great thinking from our recorded catalogue. We're Greenbelt. We're somewhere to believe in.